Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
What the hell's your problem? Okay. Right now, you're my problem.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 8, Episode 7, Pride and Prejudice. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Tara and Dave.
Hi.
Excuse me.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Basically, exactly. I agree with that yawn. Shall we discuss Pride and Prejudice?
Sure.
All right, let's start with our C-plot, in which Donna weaponizes stuff against Val and Carly gets drafted into her battle plan. So, with dismay, Donna realizes that her last client has blown her off. She has, of course, planned this meeting at the Peach Pit because where else? Also, mooey professional. Carly thought that she and Val had a great thing going, but Donna cautiously says that Val hasn't always been their most trustworthy friend, but apparently Steve already filled Carly in, and I'm so mad we didn't get to see the scene of Steve being, like, such a messy bitch about it, but oh well.
Yeah.
Donna does not know how she's going to tell Val that they're out of business. Like, just get more clients. You've been doing this for a month. Like, I don't get any part of what their business plan is, but maybe that is the problem, which is they don't have one.
I guess, except that we're supposed to care about it over a really extended period of time, much like David's slide into felony credit card fraud or whatever the fuck. But we'll get to that slowly.
Will we ever? And maybe it turns out Donna and Val are not out of business because when we see Val, she's showing outfits to Cooper Hardgrove, but he doesn't care about them. He cares about her, and he invites her to both host a dinner and be his date somehow at a restaurant he's considering investing in. Hilariously, it turns out to be Eclipse, the only restaurant in Los Angeles.
Delicious cumin.
But he's not looking for a pretty woman situation. He wants someone by his side as an equal. She has plans. He tells her to break them. Will she? She will once she hears that he put a couture gown on hold for her at Barney's. And she's like, couture? Like a designer name, maybe? Okay, whatever. Who cares? So then Steve shows up at Carly's house, but now she hates him again and won't let him in, claiming to have a dog that bites. He brought a gift, which Carly refuses, but clip two.
Well, this is for Zach.
You shouldn't have.
I know, but I wanted to.
I mean, you really shouldn't have. You already got him a baseball glove and a model airplane.
Toys won't replace a trip to Magic Mountain.
Stop playing Santa.
Carly, I like Zach. I want him to have these things.
No. Look, your problem is you don't know when enough's enough.
Come on.
Kids get all excited when they get something new. They play with it every minute of the day until they burn out, and then the toy just collects dust out in the garage.
So what's your point?
My point is that little boys and grown men have something in common. Don't use him to get to me. I don't want Zach getting attached to you just when you decide to go off and find a new toy to play with.
I thought we were past this.
We were. We're not anymore.
Ooh.
I mean, yeah, but also, I don't know. Like, first of all, this plot would be, I'd be fine with it taking this long if just Carly weren't in it. Like, I don't even dislike Hillary Swank, but like, she's such a buzzkill. But also, that isn't really Steve's problem. Like, it's one of Steve's problems, but she's actually making inadvertently a good point here about, like, you know, what a little boy actually needs is consistency and to be able to count on you. And if we can't, then we're not going to hang out because that's not life. But then she makes another point instead when she should have been making what I just said as her point. And also, why is this taking 2 years? Like, we know he doesn't end up with her.
Right.
Just, sorry, spoiler, like anyone still watching this except us, no one is. And if you are, stop right now.
Yeah. The problem here is if this were a show that where people thought at all about their plots, like what would actually be going on here is that Carly would probably feel guilty as a single parent for introducing, like letting Steve get into their lives too soon before she knew that she could count on him.
Yeah.
And now she's decided that she probably can't based on the evidence. I mean, it was an outlying fuck up. And it seemed in the last episode, like Zach at least had forgiven him. But like, I mean, she's right that he is trying to get at her through Zach. But also, this is partly her fault, too. Like if she's only known this guy for a few weeks and then is like, and now here's an adult man who can play a fatherly role in your life. Whoops, he's not reliable. That's kind of on you as the parent of Zach. That's not Steve's responsibility.
Well, and don't like it's on you to make sure the precedent is not set that mm-hmm. when adults disappoint him, he gets presents. Like that's also yes. not life. So if he already got presents and you're mad about that, don't let him give him the other presents either.
Right.
Whatever. True. We're thinking about this at, like to the infinite power more than the writers did. So let's just move on.
Okay. When we next see Val, it's the next day and she's leaving a message for Noah, canceling their Friday bowling plans, but suggesting a movie that night instead. Then she goes over to see Donna, who is eating cornflakes, not corn shooters. Apparently we've fully left corn shooters in the past.
Yes.
In front of the TV and feeling sorry for herself. And she morosely tells Val all their clients have dumped them and Donna doesn't know why. And she feels responsible and apologizes for getting Val involved in all this. And Val says it's not her fault. And they still have Cooper Hargrove and mentions his restaurant thing to see if Donna wants to go. Then back to Carly, who comes home to find her house all cleaned up and her mom beaming on the couch. And she assumes that mom did it, but it was a young man who showed up when Zach came home from school. Zach seemed to know him, so mom figured it was okay. Good job, mom? Question mark? I guess.
Cool boundaries there, Nana.
Okay. Jesus. And again, speaking of thinking of things more than anyone else did, before issue number, I'm going to say 3 of his new newspaper is out, Steve is spending several weekday afternoon hours cleaning a house. First of all, bad use of your time. Second, call a professional who knows what they're doing. What evidence do we have that Steve knows how to clean anything?
I mean, look, if I were like, here's some like clogging in like emergency that happened in a fraternity house, then yes. I would call Steve because I'm assuming yes. that he's like, oh, there's underpants and vom in the, you know, in the outgoing pipe. I've got something for that.
Sure.
This is like, I don't want, he's going to use the same rag for everything. And you'll like,
yes! see him, like
put it like he's cleaning the crisper drawer with some like Clorox wipe that he just used on the back of the toilet where all the hairs go. And it's like, oh, hey, everybody, you are welcome.
Yeah, the mop water does not get changed. Like, it would just be, no. It would be so bad. Like, and Carly doesn't want you to clean her house because you would suck at it. Like, yeah. It's a nice gesture, but as gesture, and I understand the impulse, like, yes, do something that's going to actually be useful for her more so than a gift is going to be useful to Zach, but get a professional to do it. Yeah. That's a nicer gesture.
Yeah. At least he then, got her a pizza, though.
Yes. She finds a rose on her bed and a pizza cooling under the window. That's what I didn't get. Put it in the oven. Anyway, and a note in the girliest handwriting I have ever seen, which you can see in the visual aids.
My handwriting has never been that girly. And I've been a girl for a pretty long time. It's bad.
No, it looks like my mother's handwriting and she was taught by nuns. So anyway, it's
there it is.
All about Steve's cleaning and how he never knows when enough's enough. Blah, blah, blah. She is won over. So then there's an awkward moment after Val and Noah's movie date when Brandon and Kelly run into them in the hall at the movies. And Or sorry, this is the morning after the movie date that Val and Noah had. Run into Noah in the hall upstairs at the Walsh house. Clip 3.
Val didn't tell me you were going to be spending the night. Well, we'll check with you next time. I'll get that.
I mean, first of all, always, even in scenes he's not in, Brandon, shut the fuck up. She lives there. She's allowed to have guests. She's not 14.
No.
Eat 10 bees that are like on someone's dick. Second of all, Team Noah, like, I know that he's boring and he's, you know, fake Chanel Dylan. I don't care, because in these scenes where Brandon is like swinging it around, Noah's always like, all right, B. Mm-hmm. And then even though he's like allegedly apologizing for not checking with dad first before he stayed over, mm-hmm. the doorbell rings and he's like, I'll get that. Like, he lives there. Like,
I know.
That is like professional level. Like, I don't even know what it is, but it's great. Totally undermines Brandon. And I am 100% here for it. And I will not be checking with Brandon about anything.
Yeah. It's funny to me how, like, prior to this point, when new people come into the show, like, they immediately lock into the same kind of relationships with the gangsters that, you know, people who've known them for years and years would have, but like, that it would make no sense for anyone else to, like, you know, Noah has no reverence for Brandon as the golden boy of the group, the way that other people have when they've like come into the show. And Colin tried sometimes to, you know, be like, oh, whatever, I'll pay you back with a phone, or, you know, but like, Noah for sure does not care about whether Brandon likes him. And I love it.
Yeah, it's really great. I like, occasionally I just flashback to him being like, so do you want to get a beer later? Brandon's like, no. And Noah's like, all right, bye. Like, that was probably just bad acting from Vincent, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
But who cares? It's great.
What is his last name? Young? Vincent sure. Young?
Yeah.
Vincent okay. Donat Frio? I don't know. Anyway, the moment gets more awkward when it turns out to be Donna at the door looking for Val, and Noah has to tell her that Val already left in clip 4.
See, she has breakfast with Miss Van something, and then lunch with Jane Scholzi and Mrs.
Burns
this afternoon. Not a client you guys have. You must be raking it in, huh?
Nope. Just being raked over.
Well, raise your rates if you're getting lowballed. If you're working half as hard as Valerie, you deserve it.
Right. Actually, I was supposed to help Val out tonight, but I don't think I'm going to be able to work with her now.
Okay, anything I can do to help?
Yeah. Actually, could you fill in for me tonight? You'd be doing Val a huge favor.
Okay.
So that was Noah accidentally outing Val as having stolen all of Donna's clients from out from under her, and Donna hatching a plan to be. Very awkward. All right. So cut to Val getting her hair done and having apparently just confided to her stylist, who is somehow Jane Carr from Dear John, who does not even get a name as this one-time character. She's in the credits as stylist. I hope doing someone a gigantic favor. And by the way, on the Jane Carr tip, I found out this week from friend of the pod, Jesse Murray's Facebook page, or someone that commented on a post that he made about Dear John. She's a karate instructor now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
So good for her. Yeah. So yeah, I wonder if this was like, you know, someone, she was friends with someone on the staff or what, who knows. It's definitely super slumming for her, but I was happy to see her because she is great. But anyway, Val has just told Jane Carr that she's seeing two guys at once, and unbeknownst to her, Carly is around the corner getting her hair done. And here's the whole thing. As Val says, she knows she should pursue the rich guy, but there's something about the poor one that attracts her. And then Carly comes around to say she didn't know Val got her hair done there since it's so expensive. In which case, how can Carly, the single mother who works at the Peach Pit, afford it, is what I would like to
know.
And
why would she bother? Like, who, the next time we see her, I'm pretty sure she's in, first of all, the rollers, they do nothing. And second of all, the next time we see her, she's like in whatever, Brandon's old shirt at the Peach Pit. Like,
yeah.
And the point of this is, like, this is why God invented main clips. Get the knack.
Right. I thought it was going to turn out that, like, the reason she was at this expensive salon was that, like, Steve bought her a gift certificate or something, like, as further, I recognize that you have needs that are not being met by your straightened single mother circumstances, so here's more queen for a day shit. But that never
Maybe that was, we didn't see it.
Yeah, perhaps. Naturally, as I mentioned, the restaurant Cooper Hargrove is considering investing in is Eclipse, the only restaurant in town. A Tommy Wiseau impersonator. Just kidding, but it really looks like him.
It really does.
He's playing piano. You can see him in the visual aids. Carly, there with Steve, is about to say that she saw Val at the salon and presumably blow her spot about dating two guys, but Val interrupts to offer free champagne and shut Carly up, and then spots Noah cater-waitering with a tray of, not fish cakes, alas, crab cakes, and he's helping because he says one of the other servers got sick, and Val drags him into the kitchen and orders him to stay there, but he wants to see Cooper Hargrove first, and so she points out some random old dude and takes the tray. And back on the floor, Carly asks Val for the champagne, which is kind of rude since it's not like they ordered it. And Val says she didn't like the year and sent it back, which I thought was funny. And then some other rich swell takes a crab cake and says that Cooper didn't tell her that his date was waitressing as well. And Carly overhears the date part and asks if Noah's there. And Val denies he is and says the lady said mate. And then Cooper wants to dance. It's so much stuff. Like, I think Tiffany Amber Thiessen is a talented comic actress and had been to this point, even on a dumb show, Saved by the Bell. But this is like not what we have ever seen Val doing. And it's like so much of it so close together. It's kind of a lot.
It's really a lot. And it's also, as it always is on this show, so obvious that it's completely not credible that someone wouldn't be like, why are you acting like you're on drugs? Like, it just doesn't make any sense. So like, who, you know... To check her orange juice. She's on meth.
Yeah. The old guy gets up and seems like he's going to proposition Val on the assumption that it is a pretty woman situation and that she's an escort. And before she can get offended, Noah appears again and startles her. And he ends up with the crab cakes all over his jacket. The old guy, not Noah. And Noah apologizes, addressing the old guy as Mr. Hargrove, which the real guy overhears. Somehow Val manages to separate them without their finding out what's going on. So all of that was for nothing. No discovery made. Thanks for wasting our time, you stupid show. And then Val and Noah go to the Peach Pit After Dark show, which we will get to, so that Val can confront Donna about blowing off the dinner. But Donna confronts her back, saying she knows that Val stole other clients and lied about it. Noah wisely takes off before this happens. Clip 5.
You know, it's too bad he left. He should see you for what you really are. A lying, cheating bitch.
Oh, at last. The internally innocent Donna Martin has taken off her gloves. Well, be careful, sweetheart. Don't break a nail.
You know, I gave you my trust. I gave you my friendship, and you betrayed me. How do you live with yourself?
How do you live with yourself every night alone in bed, huh? Maybe it's just because you're mad at David, you're taking it out on me. I think you got a lot more than what you bargained for when you gave it up. And speaking from experience, I know how rough David can be in bed. You go to hell.
Okay, that's a lot. It ends with a slap, which you can see in the visual aids. First of all, internally innocent. You don't want to do an ADR on that. Come on,
yeah,
guys.
Help us help you.
Next,
wait, I got a couple things.
Please,
all,
I do too. Oh no, I'm not done. Go ahead. Though.
There's a whole lot of neck pumping going on from Donna. Like, take it easy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also not clear on why Valerie thinks she should confront Donna. Like, I think your best course of action is to just not say anything. You stole all her clients. You won. Just leave it alone.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably better off. And en conclusion, David likes it rough in bed.
Okay, thank you. That was where I was going. Now, does that mean that he likes to do some kind of BDSM stuff, or that he is just not attentive enough to wait until certain circumstances are appropriate for certain things to happen? What I mean is, does he not know how foreplay works? And the reason he's rough is that he's trying to go in before his partner is prepared.
I assumed that it was some BDSM thing. Probably taught to him by, speaking of crab cakes, Ariel. And I also assumed that, well, I don't know, make a joke about his giant pants here. That, like, the reason he's wearing such huge pants now with cargo pockets, because they needed to be larger. You can see it in the visual aids, previously .TV, is because he has, like, a ball gag and a bunch of, like, quirts and blindfolds there. I'm just full of delightful imagery today. Should I leave? Because it's not going to get any better.
Oh, God. All right. So let's wrap it up. Steve walks Carly to her door where she kisses him. She had a great night. He asks whether it was see you tomorrow great or come in for a nightcap great. And she regretfully says it's not a good idea since Zach is sleeping. And for future reference, her favorite pizza toppings are olives and green peppers. Gross. That's a terrible pizza. Sorry.
Oh.
I hate both those things.
It needs onions, but yeah.
Yeah.
On its own. Not great.
But
better
as
than
he's
Hawaiian.
Yeah, true. As he's leaving, he sees Zach in the window shining a flashlight at him, and the two of them are extremely cute. There's a gif of that in the visual aids, too.
It's true. Like I said, sans Carly, this plot is fine.
Mm-hmm.
Go to Magic Mountain, show us that for 15 minutes. I'm fine with it.
On to the B plot. David remains incompetent as Kane was able forces the issue on racism. Guys, this is a lot that this show is not qualified to deal with. So
no,
let's just plunge in as David would. He likes it rough. In his car, David gets all pissy at Steve for scanning through radio stations. They started it. David gets pissy at Steve for scanning through the radio stations because we needed yet another reminder that David cannot handle stress ever. He still has not learned. There's a half page ad for the Peach Pit After Dark in the Beverly Beat. And when Steve basically fishes for a thank you, David is a bitch about that, too, acting like it's no big deal. When in fact, the Beat paid for all the Kane was able tickets it's giving away and placed the ad for free. This is not how business works. I don't get any. This makes no sense.
Anyway. No. Although, enjoy the only scene in which David is stressed out but not doing a bit of blocking that he repeats at least once in every scene hereafter, which is covering his face with his giant, chunky, beringed hands and, like, sliding them down. Like, learn different blocking, because literally this has been your only emotion since you were a junior in high school. Mm-hmm. Figure it out.
That's true.
David sucks.
He really does. David gets a call on his cell phone from a Mr. Bauer, an A&R guy from Monolith Records. He loves the demo, and they will meet about Kane Was Able tomorrow. So there's a crowd of fans lined up outside the Peach Pit After Dark doors when David and Steve show up, and a delivery guy waiting who asks if David owns the place, and David the idiot thinks he's there for a free ticket. In fact, he is delivering nuts. COD. And inside, it's the beer guy all over again as David whines that he has an account with them, and the driver says he doesn't anymore because 4 invoices are past due. And Donna comes in on this just in time for the driver to agree to take a check once. But David's desk is a mess and he can't even find his checkbook, saying he must have left it at home, which, why would you bring your business's checkbook home unless you work at home, which you don't? Anyway, the driver says this, number 6.
Look, man, I got to go. Now, am I taking my nuts with me or not?
Yes!
These nuts gotta go.
Yes. Oh, it's the highlight of the episode. I don't mind
nut
saying.
Nut guy 2020. I know, and it was like 3 minutes into it, too. I was like, oh, it's not gonna get better than this. Team nut
and
guy.
And it doesn't.
No.
Mm-hmm. Into the awkwardness, Donna gets her own checkbook out to pay him, and David promises to pay her back tonight, but she's unconcerned, and the driver gives David a hilarious look of disgust on his way out, which I gift, and you can see in the visual aids. So this Mr. Bauer is named Ari. He is way too excited about Kane Was Able, and also is in a suit, which in 1997, I doubt it. That seems weird for a record company guy, but fine. He fast talks the details of the contract he whips out for David to sign, which amounts to $35,000. But David wants to weigh all his options, at which Ari rips up the papers because it was just a dummy contract. He wanted to know if David was a player, and now he believes he is. Okay.
And how is it David's place to accept or turn down offers on behalf of the band? Like, what is his job?
Yeah. I don't get it.
I don't either.
But Ari will have the real contract Friday night at the show. And after he leaves, David essentially tells Donna he's got it made. Nothing can stop him now. And it takes David until the next day to find the band when they're practicing the Peach Pit After Dark and tell them about the offer. Like, I know it was the past, but Jesus, like, pick up a phone. But he says he turned it down and obviously they're pissed. But he adds that he was on the phone all day with other A&R guys and now they've got a bidding war. And isn't that great? Well, clip 7.
Got to hand it to you, Dave, man. You people know how to squeeze a wallet.
you mean us managers?
Yeah. Haju! Excuse me. So, who's this chump in Monolith?
He's a pretty good guy. Actually, he's taught me a lot. His name's Ari Bauer.
What kind of a name is Ari?
It's a first name.
You're a pussy. Clap, 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 clap. Also, really? You're in the music business and you've never come across any Semites before? Yeah. What the fuck? Ugh.
I mean, I believe that they haven't because they're primarily playing like Daily Stormer events, but we'll get to that. But this is also the scene.
Unless they're playing them all in like, I don't even know. Kansas City, like, the show, why?
Yeah, no kidding. So this is also the scene where David is in the gigantic pants with all the pockets, which you can, I regret to say, see in the visual aids. So then later, David and Ari and Ari's brown velour top are in David's office, also the visual aids, are in David's office looking at papers when Donna comes in to offer help setting up tonight, and they start talking about the Kane Was Able set list. Ari is very excited about a new song called Prophecy that the guys wanted him to look at, and both Donna and David look very concerned when they read the lyrics, as we hear in clip 8.
Yeah, pretty raw stuff, huh?
They're racist. I mean, it starts out talking about coming together by the end of the millennium as one people, and it ends with, we are one and supreme, one on kikes, one on niggers, and one on queers. This is completely disgusting.
You know, I never saw this song. I mean, Devin talked about it in the studio, but he never showed it to me.
Well, you're not gonna let them sing it, right?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. I mean, they're only words, Donna. I mean, you slap a parental advisory sticker on a CD, and guess what? We sell twice as many. It's the business. Besides, you don't censor artists.
Look, this is hate. That's all it is.
Done.
You can't say those words on TV anymore. No. That was rough to hear.
Yeah.
Also, in fact, even on old Law and Orders, when they sometimes use both of those words, they get bleeped when they play the reruns on like the Sundance Channel. And that is a high on the dial pay channel.
Yeah. Anyway. And any word adjacent to it, like various F words that are not the F word, which.
Yep.
Good. Fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And then they also play like they will put at least on the channel and we like if it's a quote charged episode, they'll put a warning. It's like this could trigger you, which is interesting.
Yeah.
No such warning here. Just plunged right into the hate speech, which I don't know. I guess I get it. But like, once again, the censorship argument is horseshit because nobody understands what the First Amendment actually says. It applies to.
Mm-hmm.
Not this. And David is the owner of the club. Remember that with everything that happens afterwards. Like, you own the club.
Yeah.
You have the right to decide what is and is not going to be played and by whom. Enforce it, you giant wiener.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole thing about the parental advisory sticker, too, is like this was so much later than when that was a debate that was still going on. Like, this is the late 90s. Anyway, at the show that night, Donna asks if David talked to Devin, and David says he did, and that Devin isn't budging, and they have this exchange in clip 9.
How about you?
Donna, they have the right. I may not agree with what they have to say, but they have the right to say it.
And you're going
to
profit from it? You're Jewish, David.
You're gonna let them spew this hate on your own religion and make money from it?
Donna, they hate everybody. They're kind of equal opportunity bigots, you know?
That's not funny.
I've never been an observant Jew. I'd feel like a hypocrite if I took this personal.
David, your grandfather lived through the Holocaust. Isn't that personal enough?
Well, how can I change what happened to him back then?
Starting now.
Wow, David. Oh my God. I have in my notes, they should have to do so much fancy footwork for him to come back from this as a character, but they won't. Even at this point, I knew they wouldn't.
Also, not for nothing, but everyone needs to object to bigotry and have a hardline zero tolerance stance on it, regardless of their membership in whatever aggrieved party or not.
Mm-hmm.
It's not okay. And it's, on top of that, going to incite a riot, but we will get to that.
Yeah. Ugh. I mean, they have the right, like, no, to Sarah's point earlier, they don't. You own the club, so you have the right to tell them to not play that song, and or even better, don't book them, you fucking idiot. Whatever.
And don't represent them and kill yourself.
Yeah. Start listening to what they're actually saying to you and about you before it gets to this point where, like, you've invested so much of your own money like an idiot into their success when it's been clear from the start they should not be successful because they're bigots. Anyway, so the crowd starts chanting the band's name as David dithers over whether to let them take the stage. And Ari tells David he's not in college anymore and that there's no lesson plan to follow. If David fucks this up, he won't get another chance like this. David was hoping that Ari would show him the ropes, and Ari says he did, and David shouldn't hang himself with them. And then Devin appears, pointedly sniffling, which nothing comes of that, but it's impossible not to observe. And to ask David when they're going on, David says they're not. Devin says they won't play the song, and David says it doesn't matter. And with the crowd still chanting, ever more creepily, by the way, David announces that there was a problem and Kane was able won't be performing. And Donna is so proud of him, but the rest of the crowd is booing as Devin gets up, and this happens. Clip 10.
Hey, there is no problem. This guy right here is the one with the problem. Any of you people have a problem?
No!
Trying to censor us. You gonna let him do that?
And then a fight breaks out, but not before the redheaded, whatever, keyboard player, stepchild of Kane Was Able makes the most hilarious silent movie, I don't know, guys, face. It's in the visual aids. And I'm like, who is that face for? Is it for David? Because I get that.
Yeah. So Donna just stands there as one of the guys in the band throws a fucking amp at David. And Devin says this. Clip 11.
Dude, nobody messes with me in my bed, ever!
What a line to go out on, acting guy.
Ever!
Also, so you can do ADR, obviously that line was, so maybe you could have let Val take a second shot at internally innocent.
Whatever. Yeah, I guess since she wasn't trying to pass a cube poo at the time, they decided it wasn't necessary.
Perhaps. So David offers free tickets to the next show, but everybody boos except Donna, who beams. And I'll just break in here to say, if you're interested in seeing an actually nuanced and suspenseful and creepy as hell movie about Nazi music and the white supremacist fans who enjoy it, I would suggest Green Room. It's one of Anton Yelchin's last performances before he died. Patrick Stewart is in it too. Dave and I watched it. It's super duper creepy, and it's rough. It's very violent, but it's really unblinking and doesn't let anyone off the hook, unlike this show. Here's the denouement of this stupid fucking storyline. So Donna finds David when the club is empty to tell him that she's proud of him. And then everyone gets way out of their depth in clip 12.
Well, my grandfather was a little boy. An SS officer ripped his favorite book out of his hand and burned it right in front of him.
Yeah, I remember you telling me. That was a children's book. These were hate lyrics.
Yeah. But they're words. Just the same. I mean, you can't censor someone's beliefs and ideas no matter what you think of them, you know? You gotta think of better ones.
So what stopped you?
I got mad at myself for ignoring what they were saying. You know, it's almost the same thing that my grandfather's parents did before the Holocaust. They kept saying, don't worry about it. Everything will be fine. This will all blow over. But it didn't. It just blew up. You know, my grandfather was lucky. He lived. The rest of his family didn't.
They were all killed.
They're my family, too. I owe them something, you know? Something worth a lot more than any amount of money I would have made by shutting up. The band has the right to say what they want. Not in my place.
Okay. Donna said earlier that his grandfather was a Holocaust survivor. Like, she didn't already know that all of the rest of his family died in the Holocaust?
Yeah.
Why did she react to that like it was brand new information? Also, is David trying to say that by telling Kane was able not to play that song in his club, he was the same as the Nazi who slapped the book out of his grandfather's hands?
I think so.
Okay, great.
Because all censorship Perfect. Is the same and any words have the right to exist.
Uh-huh.
And you know who told me that? This show, which is totally qualified to speak to these issues.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I won't get into it, but I'll just say briefly, pure free speech advocates tend to be white liberals who don't like to think about class and the people who are hurt because they are marginalized and don't have power to respond to displays of wonderful free speech.
Shut up.
Yeah, like, if they're just words, use different ones then.
Mm-hmm. That's so stupid. Like, yeah, it's just a misunderstanding of the First Amendment from everybody, because they're dumb.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. Ah! On to our A-plot. The alleged shooter goes free, and Brandon is a bitch about it. So... Brandon kicks things off by trying to throw his weight around with the cops about Kelly's lineup fail from the last episode until she comes in. She's finally starting her job at the Foundation, which is apparently taking kids to daycare.
While styling your hair like them. Her hair is so stupid. It's so stupid. It made me want to kill her. It's in the visual
aids. I knew you were going to say that. I knew you were going to say that, and I knew you were going to cut a clip, which is why I must be honest with you and the listener. I wear my hair like that almost every day because I'm really lazy. My hair is extremely thick, and it just has to be out of my face. That's my solution. I'm sorry!
Your hair is not the same as Kelly's. Kelly's is not extremely thick, and you don't use a fucking baby voice. This is the difference.
You're sweet to try and draw a difference between us, but it's like the same. Anyway, Brandon wants to drive her.
Look, I'm not the one being a bitch about it. I'm just saying.
I know.
Let's go back to talking about Steve's rag. Just we could all agree.
Better that than David's ball gag, Sarah. Anyway.
I'll fire myself.
Brandon wants to drive Kelly, but the kid's parents live in South Central, so it's out of his way. And then he gets all clenched because South Central, like, it sounds like she's basically doing social work. So this is probably going to happen from time to time. Get used to it. She very nicely, for once, for Kelly, and patiently tells him that he is not her bodyguard and that he can't change what happened no matter how many times he calls the detective. And Brandon is a bitch about it in clip 13.
Excuse me for wanting to catch the guy who almost killed you.
I want to catch him too, but the thing is, I have to move on with my life, and so do you.
I have gotten on with my life. I'm working at the newspaper.
Well, there you go. Why don't you do your job, let Detective Woods do his, and I'll do mine, okay?
I'm so glad that Brandon is at the helm of a brand new editorial product in the Los Angeles area when he describes this event as by saying catch him like you're playing fucking cops and robbers. Like, this is a great insight into your attitude toward criminal justice. Nice.
Yeah. But it's just the tip of that iceberg. Believe me.
True. In the bedroom that night, Kelly says it felt good to be at work and among the living, and Brandon is glad and apologizes for how he was this morning. And she baby voices that the doctor said it's okay for them to bone. I'm paraphrasing. And then we have to watch them briefly make out before Brandon's boner wilts and Kelly notices, and he says he can't stop thinking about the shooting. And then Kelly's boner wilts also, and she's annoyed that he can't get past this, and he decides he's done talking in clip 14.
You know what? You got a lot of work to do. I'm gonna go downstairs and watch TV.
I miss you.
Me too.
What?
Oh my God, break up.
Seriously, you hate each other. Break up.
Yeah. Yes. You can't even do the one thing that doesn't require you to talk. Like, clearly this is beyond saving. Anyway. The next morning, Kelly stops on her way out to work at the couch where Brandon slept in his jeans in his own house, and where he's still very pointedly lying as he reads a magazine and makes a shitty face at her. Like, all of this was so staged for her to come upon. Like, it's so stupid.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure he had shoes on under that blanket, like a douche. Because there was a giant toaster-shaped blob where his feet would be, which must be his giant toastery sneaks.
Fuck with nuts. Lifts in them. Mm-hmm. He says he's sorry that he didn't come back up and suggests a date that night. Like, if you're not still mad, what is all of this? But whatever. She agrees to a date, but then Detective Woods calls and Kelly orders him to say he can't talk, but Brandon doesn't. And we don't find out what happens, but when we next see them, Kelly and Brandon are leaving a movie and pass Val and Noah in the crowded lobby. And when she kind of trips, Kelly, Brandon flashes back to her shooting and then gets way too aggressive with the guy that's helping her up. And Noah has to intervene and Kelly is annoyed again and they hate each other and it's all bad.
And if this is what you wear, like, I don't think you do your hair like this. So I'm just going to say, and it's in the visual aids from two angles. What are you doing? Like, you don't ever want to bone anyone again if that's your hair. Like, there have been some moments where in this season where Garth has looked roof because she had a newborn at this time, I think. Mm-hmm. That's fine. Yeah. But, like, there's no need, like, unless you were doing your own hair, which you weren't because you work on a TV show. What even is that? It's just so half-assed. It's really sad. Ugh.
Yeah, her hair is so thin that, like, it must require a lot of work to make it not look just lank and greasy. And that work was not being done a lot of the time from what we have seen so far. Hello?
I'm here.
Oh, okay.
We agree.
Of course we do. I actually like her with a pixie cut. The problem is, like, she does it and then she can't commit to it and immediately starts growing it out and then it gets stupid.
Yeah. Anyway. I mean, and her hair right now, like, in theory is not bad, but in practice, like, she's not washing it. And the, like, hair department, I guess, hates her because they keep putting her in these, like, half-assy, like, I don't know, garage clean-out day hairstyles. Dowdy cardigans, short-sleeve dresses where the sleeves just hit her at this very, like, it's a very mumsy feel right now.
Yeah. So many tiny floral prints too.
Yeah.
I mean, with the hair, this is the last thing I'll say about it, I swear to God. You can tell the difference between how that cut is supposed to look, because a couple of episodes when she first came back from the hospital, when we had that shot in the visual aids of her with Jackie together, and they both have essentially the same haircut. But the difference is that Anne Gillespie's hair, I think, is texture is more like mine. So it holds that shape better. Whereas Jenny Garth must just require like a million pounds of mousse or something for it to do anything, because it's so thin.
Well, yeah. Or, I mean, it's maybe not necessarily thin, but like you're going to have to curl it. Like you have to help it, because I have Garth hair and it's like you can't. Mm. It's not just going to hang like that out of the shower. Like you're going to have to work on it. Love, New Jersey.
This has been Hair Talk. Anyway, we do have more of this storyline. But first, we have a message for Jill.
Jan and Jay wanted to mark the occasion of your birthday in 90210 style, but Jay also told us you have a special affection for the very soapy post-high school years. So with that in mind, we made a list of ways you can celebrate your special day like a true mid-90s gangster. Number one, get your friend who owns a bar to let you paint a seriously ugly mural.
Surprise your new boss by very professionally bringing your boyfriend on a work trip.
Freak out a finance weasel by faking a pregnancy.
Grab an ex and help a mare give birth.
Get shot!
Okay, but seriously, don't do any of those things. We're pretty confident you're better at not just celebrating your birthday, but also living your life than any of these boneheads.
From all of us here, and from Jay and Jen,
Happy birthday, Jill! That was almost harmony. Back to the A plot. Sorry. Noah shows up.
Wait, do you want to try that again? Let's try that again. All right, go. Somebody go. Somebody start J. Jill.
Happy birthday, Jill. Dave ruined it.
Okay.
We'll send you a bill for the extra $5.
I was just going to say, we're sending the money back is what's happening. Sorry about that.
If you want more of these, by the way, you can still buy a house ad at previously.tv/ads. Who wouldn't want to? We're so good at singing.
Second prize is 2 readings of your birthday ad.
Okay, seriously though, back to the show. Noah shows up at the beat to talk to Brandon, who says he can't, and Noah then just sits there in classic Noah style until Brandon then is forced to talk and fill the silence and say he's sorry that he lost his temper. And Noah says it's no problem, at least not for him, but he hopes that Brandon and Kelly had a chance to talk things out, as he says in clip 15.
There's not much to say.
Well, I'm telling you as a friend, I think there is.
You want to be a friend? Then stop trying to be such a hero. You saved David, you saved Kelly. Lose the cape. Stay out of my business.
You're losing it, man. You want Kelly to be afraid of everyone? Start with yourself. It's you she's afraid of now, man. You.
I mean, look, I wish that he had left David to drown, but what? What is he actually telling Noah to do? Like, that's a really weird thing to say.
What he's telling Noah to do is to stop being the Brandon and saving everyone.
Yes.
He just used different words.
Of course.
And braid them instead of saying it.
Yeah, he did. Before Brandon can even pretend to have a comeback for this, Detective Wood calls in clip 16.
Yeah, we got it.
You sure?
Positive.
You doing a lineup? You want me to come down there?
No, later. Right now, he's at County Hospital.
I want to see him.
Mm-mm. No way.
Detective, do you have a girlfriend?
Yeah. Yeah, why? Why?
Wouldn't you want to spend 5 minutes with the guy who shot her?
To shake his hand? Oh, this isn't about me.
So it only takes you 5 minutes? Oh, that's not what you're talking about. Also, hey, Detective Pro... Don't tell him which fucking hospital it is when you know full well that he is literally a throbbing boner of wanting to shoot the shooter. What are you doing?
Yeah. He said that the first time you met, that he basically threatened to, like, go full vigilante on this guy. What?
Like, I realize that he's tiny and you're not taking it seriously, but apparently you knew it was going to happen, as we're going to find out. Ugh.
Right. So then Brandon is at the hospital at Detective Wood's direction, pulling back the sheet on a corpse because a random person off the street can totally get close enough to a corpse in a hospital to do that, I'm sure. Whatever. Brandon doesn't get it, but Detective Woods tells him that's the shooter, and Brandon insists yet again that he knows what he saw, but Detective Woods says Brandon saw the guy's driver. That guy was there, but the deceased is the one who pulled the trigger, and he died 20 minutes ago in a gang shootout, and the casings on the bullets he fired matched the ones from the scene of Kelly's shooting. The prints match too. I'm not sure what the timeline is of them making these lab tests. Like, when was this gang shootout? I mean, obviously he didn't necessarily have to die the same day as the shootout, but still.
And this actor is usually good. Like, he's definitely hates that guy. He's worked a lot in other stuff. He's in major crimes, or he was. I'm not sure if that's still on.
The detective, not the corpse.
The corpse is excellent. But he's having to deliver so much like crime solving exposition that it's not well delivered. And you almost can think that he's just making shit up so that Brandon will finally fuck off. He's just like, oh, yeah, we totally caught the guy. There was also a boot print that matched, and he dropped a bunch of hair with the tag still on, and that matched. And he also gave a full confession, and there was a photo.
His calling card was his business card.
For drive-bys, call 1-800. Shut up, Brandon. I don't even know.
Wait. For drive-bys, call 1-800.
Drive-bys.
800-988-2300.
Drive-bys.
Oh, my God. We're all going to hell. Oh, wait. We're already there with Brandon.
So Brandon's guy was the driver both times, but this time he squealed and Brandon leans in and it's fucking terrible. Clip 17.
Whoa. Wait, what you doing?
I just want him to know I was here.
He's dead, asshole.
You got what you deserve.
Meanwhile.
Well.
Close up. You'll see this in the visual aids. I apologize for that. But once again, Priestley is in need of a shave up in the back. And there's just this little like anger fin of poofy pomaded hair that filled me with homicidal rage.
Oh, God.
I
so
hate
terrible.
Him
anyway,
so much. I hate him so much.
Let's please get to our final scenes where fucking Kelly, the dumb shit, is reading Chicken Soup for the Soul in bed when Brandon comes so home basic. And confirms that Detective Woods called her. And when Brandon saw the guy lying there dead, he told him he got what he deserved. And Kelly looks stricken, even though he didn't hear he's dead, but whatever.
And also he did. And just because Brandon says it doesn't automatically mean it's wrong. Just annoying.
Right. She says he didn't mean it, however, but Brandon says he did. It was just a body. He tells Kelly he's sorry. She knows she loves him. He loves her too. Neither of them loves the other. The end.
So but they're going to be loving each other. Well, whatever.
Soon. Please. It's going to be bad enough when we get it there. Okay. Let us name the episode MVP.
Nut guy.
No question. Yeah. I mean, I would give it to an honorable mention to Donna for having been right about this stupid band, like right from the start. But then she's so stupid with trying to fuck over Val in the most convoluted way possible that like that just cancel each other out.
And also, yeah, she's nagging David to neg the band, but she still goes to their show. Like,
yeah,
don't you have a sweatshop to break up?
It's a great point.
Stick one landing. Boob cavern.
Okay, least valuable player. I mean, I hate David, but the racist band is worse.
Whoever made those crab cakes, because when they get spilled on the guy, it looks like they're full of whipped cream.
Or cream cheese. Yeah, you're right. Gross.
Okay. I mean, the racist band, but yeah, also.
Sure.
C plus crab cake. Canceled.
800-588-2300 crab cake. Crab cake. you will. I'm going to be singing that, that jingle every
crab
every
cake
episode
and Barnes
now. Sorry,
injury attorneys.
Yes. User submitted challenge from at Misty Ramirez 03 on Twitter, who asks us to list 5 ways the episode would be improved if Kelly's amnesia / brain injury had remained permanent. Well, she probably wouldn't have moved back in with Brandon, so that would have been better for her.
That's true. She'd still be making cow eyes at Noah, which would infuriate Brandon. I will note that the reading of Chicken Soup for the Soul may mean that the brain injury persists. Sorry, soup fans.
Did you know there's Chicken Soup for the Soul dog pet food? I found that out when my sister opened a pet food store.
Oh, FYI. God. Okay.
Just a by the way. Okay, back to Kelly. She wouldn't have probably ever started at the Foundation and thus probably not ruined countless disadvantaged children's lives, which I assume we're yet to see.
She would have maybe forgotten what she's supposed to be doing with her hair and hair products and had started from scratch and started, you know, picking correct styles for her hair weight and shape.
I mean, to that end, like, she might have just spent more time in the hospital altogether, which would mean Jenny Garth could have been under blankets and that would have been better for her.
Yeah.
Than a lot of the clothing styling choices that were inflicted upon her. So that makes 5.
Yeah, I agree. I also agree that that makes 5, I guess. Next time on Again With This, David kites a check, Donna contends with the ghost of dumb Christmas baby past, and Kelly and Brandon think public displays of affection make them less boring. Tara and I can't really speak to that because we both barfed ourselves inside out to death. But if we were alive, we'd tell you to haunt our visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This at our website, previously.tv. You can follow that website on Twitter at @previouslyTV, and you can follow this podcast at @AWT90210. I'm Disputed Nut Delivery, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Lax Hospital Security, Tara Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Pretty Raw Stuff. He's David T. Cole, and he's on Twitter at Glark. Talk to you next time.
Pretty Raw Stuff.
Hi. You know what to do after the beep and Rooney.
Oh, God.
Kill me. God. Why was that so long?
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.